Hey, this is Ash Ketchum, and you're listening to Lone Holdout. Gotta try it all.
Just talk to Abby on the telephone. She said, stop what you're doing, baby, come on home. I can't hold out. I can't hold out.
Welcome to a very special Slapisode of Lone Holdout. I'm your host, Emily Brinkmeyer, and here with me are the two guys who are making my podcast crossover dreams come true. They are the hosts of the video game history podcast Slap the Show. And so for the 20 of you listeners who are here to hear me, I'm happy to introduce Hector Perez. Hi, Hector.
Hello.
And Zach Shepard. Hi, Zach.
Hi.
And we are here to talk Pokemon.
Now,
you guys have about the same number of episodes as me.
About
20 episodes of Slap a Show.
Do we have the same listeners?
We have about the same amount of listeners. Yeah,
20 is pretty ambitious. That's a good number for right now.
We're doubling up.
Okay, yeah. So let me get 40.
40 listeners. 40.
Awesome.
The sound of our voice hitting 40 people. It's amazing. So I've listened to every episode. Now, you guys have some sort of a following. Do you have a name for your fans? Do you have slapheads?
You read my mind, because that was the go-to slapheads. Customary to the greeting of slapheads is that we do slap them upside the head, hence the name. So,
because you said slap-a-mites just now.
Slap-a-mites. That's what I said.
That actually sounds really good.
You like slap-a-mites?
It's a mouthful.
The slap-ites? Oh, that sounds like a disease.
No, that would be slap-itis.
Slap-itis? You got the slap-itis?
The only cure is a slap-endectomy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I get rid of it?
So, guys, I am a slaphead. I've listened to every episode that you guys have done. And in one episode, Hector, I think you said we have enough material to do an entire episode about Pokemon.
We sure do.
And so that was really exciting to me because this is an episode I've been wanting to do for a long time. Because I think Pokemon is in the public consciousness, but I don't know anything about it. So
it amazes me whenever I hear that.
I know. It sort of just gave me like goosebumps over here, right?
That's a very accurate description, actually. For me, what was that one more time?
Suspense.
Ooh. Oh, good. Almost as good as the last take. Pokemon is one of those rare games that has crossed the generational gap. Of course, a lot of Nintendo games have too, but there's just really something special about Pokemon.
Right. I recently did an episode about wrestling, and I kind of had the same reaction that growing up, you know, in the 90s, like we did, it was kind of a big deal, but I was shocked to find out that people still like this.
Yeah, it absolutely blows my mind, because as a 14-year-old kid, I remember actually tuning in every week to Monday Night Raw, and I don't know what the other one was because I've long ago let them in my head, but once I turned 15, I lost almost all interest in it, and it was still amazing to hear people going on. But it's kind of like it's a drama. It has everything. It has drama, and it has people slamming each other. And what else could you really want?
Pokeballs.
Yeah.
You gotta have the balls. The balls are necessary. All the different types of balls.
Yeah, there's
very good variety.
There's quite a many few Pokeballs. I mean, with every iteration, every generation, there's just more balls to choose from.
Yeah, they add a new ball or a few every time. They have new balls every game.
Let's see. Let's run down the few. A net ball, a fastball.
Well, the Pokeball, original.
The Ultra Ball. Yeah, the Ultra Ball. The standard one is the regular Pokeball, which is the regular one you see. The red and white.
It looks like a fishing bobber, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's one good way of describing it. And
I thought that was the only kind.
No, there's many different kinds.
Eventually, they start breaking out of them when you try to capture them, and the original one becomes deprecated
in the game, in the animes, in the manga.
There's a lot of content wrapped around Pokemon.
There's radio dramas too.
The cards and the video games and the merchandising. I knew those things.
Well, from that merchandising, I think an extent of that is the manga, because it's not as heavily followed here in the States, but it actually has a decent following in Japan. But I would attribute that to here more in the States is the extent of merchandising.
And that came out after the show?
Came out. Well, it came out during the show's run. Mm-hmm. So the current run of the show is continuous. Just hit the microphone. I shouldn't make that many hand gestures.
That's a slap for Hector for punching my gear. Yeah.
He's got it. I got to take care of it.
Continue.
No, so there is the original Pokemon animated show that everyone's been watching since, I think, like 1995, 1996, and that one's still ongoing till today. The reason they keep it going for so long, as I think I explained this to you previously, is they'll use it to
cross over with the games.
They'll tie in the games, push the plots of the games.
Yes,
yeah, so it's kind of what you used to watch as a kid every morning, where it's like there's toys to the cartoons you're watching, so that's the whole marketing tie-in.
Do the kids ever age?
There's actually some very interesting theories on, well, the answer, first of all, to that is no, they don't age.
And when you say theories, you're talking about fan theories.
There is a running, I think, meme that says, like, Catches Them All is still only 10 or something like that. Yeah. So the protagonist, Ash Ketchum, is still 10. Or I think actually they might have aged him once already after a decades long.
Well, we talked about this where they changed the voice actor, right?
Did we have this discussion?
Because probably something that will end up at the beginning or end of the episode is a clip that my brother got from the voice actress at Comic-Con.
Right.
Ooh.
So
saying the name of my podcast.
That's even better.
That's pretty great.
Yeah, the show did change voices.
And so originally it was a lady doing the thing that voice actors quite often do. If you've got a young or teenage boy, you cast a woman to play it, and the voice never changes. And so this lady's name was Victoria, I think, and played Ash Ketchum for quite a while.
Yeah, the original, when the show first came out, it premiered on the WB. After the WB merged with CW, with UPN to form CW. And there was also some licensing issues with 4Kids Entertainment, the series, the people that made the dubbing here in the United States. So they were kind of at a loss of where to go, where to run, and then they ended up just catching or putting them on Cartoon Network. And ever since their premiere on the Cartoon Network, they've had a separate cast for the English dub. So wow. I think in the beginning it was Veronica Taylor, and now I believe it's Sarah Nadocheny. Mm-hmm. That's quite a name.
So the change in voice actress didn't have to do with the aging of the character.
No. It was more just syndication and production.
So what came first, the TV show or the game? The TV show was in response to the popularity of the game.
Actually,
right?
And Hector, you probably know way more about this than I do, but wasn't the original, like the spark, wasn't it Pocket Monsters?
Yes.
In Japan?
Well, okay, so the first thing that came out was the game. Now, the game is made by a company called Game Freak, so it's not directly made by Nintendo. So Satoshi Tajiri is like the original creator of Pokemon. He's kind of the guy in charge of Game Freak. Game Freak, before they were a game company, used to publish like comic books and all that stuff,
right.
Manga related stuff in Japan. And they took a stab at games, and it was one of their early games that they really wanted to get done. It was full of delays because Game Freak couldn't secure funding. So they found different ways to secure their funding by making other games, sometimes games for Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
And
as a game developer, that's a tall order to develop a game like Pokemon, where
absolutely.
You have so many different attributes and all that, not just programming, but design wise, that's a lot of time and a lot of money spent.
And even then, the end result was not very good. The source code was really choppy and broken up, it was prone to glitches, and the sprites were terrible, so...
I had trouble with this. You prepared a study guide for me, mostly YouTube videos, when the word sprites came up, I don't know what that means.
So, in gaming, because this is more Zach's territory, you want to explain to what a sprite
is? I'm not actually sure why the term sprite is...
So it's not Pokemon specific?
No, okay. It's not. A sprite is more commonly related to, in a 2D context, when you have like a 2D game or even a 2D animation, a sprite is a character that moves along.
Okay.
And it doesn't have to be a character either. It can be like a brick that moves up and down or something. But just
so when
you
playing...
refer to that organization of pixels, it is a sprite.
So when you're playing kind of an older pixelated game and you can tell what you're supposed to click on because it looks different from the background, that's a sprite.
Well,
sort of.
Okay.
It means you're changing a sprite.
Okay.
A sprite could be anything. Let me just paint a mental picture really quick, right? You're playing a 2D game. You have the ground, which is made up of what looks like modular blocks. Each one of those is a sprite.
Okay.
You have the character that runs on the plane, like Sonic or whatever. He's a sprite. You have the enemies that move along. There's sprites, trees, there's sprites. Everything's it's just
so a all the bunch elements little... making up this scene are yeah. sprites.
Yes. It's kind of okay. like in a cartoon sense. You have a background, and it's just one giant drawing. But at the same time, you have cells that mm-hmm. constantly change. So it could be the characters, and each one of those individual animations is almost a sprite of its own.
Okay.
It's almost like doing a flip book really quick, too. And there's different ways to animate sprites, too. That's just kind of one of them. But mm-hmm. In terms of sprites, since Pokemon has two primary modes, which is an overworld mode, and when you engage in a Pokemon battle, you have an entire different set of mechanics put in. You have a battle scenario where it's you at the bottom screen, you at the bottom half of the screen, your opponent at the top half. So and even then the battles break down between you against another trainer or gym leader or person, or you against a wild Pokemon. So you'll always have the bottom screen and they'll always have the top. So the animation or just the sprites themselves, the display Pokemon, the early ones that Game Freak made were not so good, mm-hmm. but they refined them in later generations, of course.
Just get better and better.
The first ones that came out over there were the red and green versions. And
now explain to me the different versions, because there are so many. You got red, green,
now there is
yellow.
Yeah, they've
run out of silver. Colors and precious elements to name right. their games after. Now they've gone to actually naming things by two, and everyone was like, whoa.
And that's just an addition of it, right?
Yes, it's an extension to the original games that are previously numbered after those. So,
and does every edition have more Pokemon?
Yes. The way it initially worked out is, so Satoshi Tajiri was very into bug collecting when he was a kid. So there was rapid urbanization of his small little town. So he wanted to give people bug catching without going out there and catching bugs. And his idea was, why don't I make a game about it? That's also kind of the reason why there are bug type Pokemon, why that's a primary class of Pokemon.
It reminds me of Caterpie.
Yeah, exactly. One of the first bug Pokemon that you encounter in the original games is Caterpie. And so he just wanted to do that. He wanted to give people that didn't have the wilderness anymore because of rapid urbanization, he wanted to give them the chance to catch. And what some people would do is even trade bugs. So one of the cool ways that he got to the different versions of the games is because each game has, within its class, has its own Pokemon that are unique to that game. Mm-hmm. So the way you catch them all is by trading with someone that has the opposite version of you.
Yeah, and you had to. There was no way, Game Shark excluded, to get all of the Pokemon in your series. And it's... It was really cool because it forced you to have a social element in the game. And I think that's also where Pokemon was innovative, is not just in their design mechanic and the way that they handled their battle systems and all of the other things they did really well, but the battle your friends with the link cable and to trade monsters to your friends, and you can name them and all the, add your own personal touch to them. And so you just have this, who knows when a friend trades you a monster, you don't know if he got it from someone else first. And if that person got it from somebody else first, you don't know how far that monster's come into your game.
In later iterations of the game, you're actually able to keep track of this Pokemon belonged to so-and-so, and they'll have their name and their ID number. So even if this Pokemon was traded multiply, those numbers are also apparent in the Pokemon's history. Mm-hmm. It's a part of them now.
They even took a step further in the social world in the most recent games.
Yes.
The Nintendo DSs have a technology called Street Pass, and Street Pass is literally, while your system's folded up and in your pocket, it still sort of tries to phone home. And then when you walk by somebody else that has a system that's also in that sleep mode, it passes data between your two devices without permission. I mean, it just kind of goes and just passes it.
Is that kind of controversial?
It hasn't been. Well, Nintendo's really, really, really overly protective of their data and information. So mm-hmm. no, as far as I know, there's been no exploits.
So it's not like two iPhones talking to each other.
No, okay. Yes. There's no I know your email and your personal phone number now, and I know where you live. No, none of that stuff happened. But because of the Street Pass, it would integrate your friends and passersby into your world. So you would, if in the game you walk up and turn on your TV because you can interact with the environment, it would say, it would have an interview between a news anchor and this person that you walked by on the street, and it would say, It knows from their system that their name and their origin and where they're from and their favorite color.
And when you say this person, you're talking about an avatar that they've made?
It's anyone. I mean, it could be a friend.
Well, the trainer, because in each game, the primary protagonist is the Pokemon trainer.
Yeah.
And I say Pokemon trainer because you choose what their name is. So therein, you kind of begin your journey to start this avatar.
Now, in the early versions of the game, I've seen where it's just, are you a boy or are you a girl? Now, does it get
that was revolutionary more? Because at the very first red and green, you could only play as a boy. It wasn't until the second generation of games past red, green, and yellow that you could play as either a boy or a girl. Mm-hmm. So that blew people's minds. I remember looking into that as previously playing the other generation very briefly and going into Gold and Silver being like, are you a boy? And a girl's like, what?
Now, is it still just generic boy, generic girl, or do you get to the avatar at all?
There's a lot of radical changes that have taken place in the most recent generation of games. For the most part, previously, it had just been generic girl character, generic boy character. There were no customizations to the actual characters themselves. But in the more recent games, you could do slight modifications to your character.
Color, so on the Nintendo DS that we're talking about, when they're doing an interview with the trainer, is this something that is customized or generic?
It's customized.
Okay.
Because it'll have their player's name and it will pull from the DS and know like what their favorite color is. And so I remember when I turned it on, it was actually Hector's information in my DS.
Of course.
And it said, you know, it's like, I'm here interviewing Hector Perez from San Angelo, Texas. And it's like, what is your favorite color? And he goes like, blue. And then the TV goes and turns off. But it's just that small experience. And I'm going to stop hitting my mic now. It's a small experience that tied everything together for me. Like I love that social spectrum of gaming where it doesn't really make sense. It's not necessary. It didn't change the way I played. It was just a Easter egg of sorts.
And when we were kids, the social aspect took on another element with the card game.
Yes, the card game. And I obsessed over those stupid cards.
And this is actually my first time learning about trading the monsters just in the video game sense. I didn't know that was actually a thing. As far as trading them, I thought it was just cards.
So I think that's what I really liked about the social aspect. It's you could battle. There was a friendliness and there was also a rivalry. So you could friendly trade Pokemon, but at the same time, things got serious when you decided to do a battle instead. But yeah, there were cards. As a matter of fact, they were so popular at one point that they were actually banned from a lot of schools because they started fights. Mm-hmm. And of course, you hear everything and you believe everything on the news. So it's like kids getting into fights over Pokemon cards and
And were there some that were more valuable than others?
Absolutely.
Holographics.
Holographic ones, the shiny ones.
The shinies. Literally shiny. The whole card shines.
In a kid's mind. Ooh, shiny. So there it's better.
Did they eventually get like textured ones in there and stuff like that? Mm. I remember there some of the designs of the monsters or the card designs were designed to complement the monster.
So, well, there's a lot of ways on determining the rarity or, I guess in this case, the value of a card. One of those factors is rarity. The other one's condition. The other one is when it came out. So the original ones, like some of the first launches of Pokemon cards, it doesn't even matter how unvaluable they would have been back then. They still hold some value if they're still in good condition.
Today?
Just because, yeah, they're OG cards kind of.
Oh, really?
So a good and astute trader of Pokemon cards could actually look at cards based by, and there are actually companies out there that just like baseball cards will rate your cards and give them a set price based on condition, based on quality, based on when it was printed, print level.
So were there people like the Beanie Baby collectors who would go out and try and make a fortune off of these?
They do. And I think they're still trying to. I mean, it's a lot harder. You don't hear about it as much, but there was kind of a phenomenon for a while where people always try to collect something because they're believing that it is going to eventually gain price beyond what its printed price is, just like comic books in a way.
Right.
So there were many people. And I think if you even go on eBay, you'll be surprised to see how much some of those cards fetch. I mean, we're talking,
you can probably still find a whole lot of them on there today too.
A few of them are at the hundreds.
I actually have my original booklet of cards in San Angelo. I think it took a little bit of water damage though, which the unfortunate part of it.
But, oh, you're never going to be able to sell those now.
Yeah, I know. But even
that was your trust fund.
Even the binder is like totally designed with the anime.
Like, oh, wow.
I decked that stuff out. Pun intended.
So you want to know what some of the most expensive cards are, and this is going to blow your mind.
Yeah.
Okay, so some of the most expensive ones were ones in the packs that weren't even open. If you have an unopened pack from some of the first and second series of cards,
I believe that.
Yeah.
Those actually, just the sheer fact that they're kept in there, so you know they're really good quality. No one's touched them.
Well, that's like action figures. It's mint in the box.
Yes, and I think that's the ironic part is people open them up and it's like, oh, this one's going to be worth more. This one's going to be worth less. It's just like, no, if you have a pack of them and they're unopened, don't open them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's the allure mystery. It's, and even today, the Japanese still do it with blank box toys, which is another thing that me and Zach are really into. It's they have a series of like 8 or 9 per set. And it's just a blank box. They won't tell you what's in it.
That's the name of the company?
There's a few companies like Kid Robot.
Kid Robot's
is
the one, I like.
One big one. But when you buy these, it depends on the series too. They have currently they're doing Futurama, and then they also do Marvel.
And I can't get Bender.
Superheroes. So the way blank boxes work is you don't know what you're getting until you actually buy the box and open it. So
they
it's
do that
based
with
on odds.
Lego minifigs.
Yes, and they do that too. It's yeah. it's a very similar process for that.
The
too.
Second the Kid Robot puts out their Mega Man series, I'm broke. That's it. Done. It's like $10 per model.
Yep.
Yeah.
So what are the most expensive cards?
So running through a little bit of the internet right now, we have very weird and standard prices. There's some, I think the Japanese ones fetch a little bit more of a price.
Now you're looking at what people are asking. Maybe we don't know what people would actually pay for this.
Well, to be fair, some of these prices seem pretty standard.
Are you like, on
this?
I wonder if it has an appraisal. Like
this guy has like pretty much the 150. There.
So you're not on eBay right now. You're like on a collection site. Not a collection site. You're in collections right now.
Well, I'm actually on eBay.
You are on eBay. Yeah. Okay, so you're looking at things that actually have bids.
Yeah. For example, let's look at a random one right here. We have a Shining Gyarados, which is an alternate coloring. Yeah, he knows what this is. This is an
Yeah, I got that in the game too.
In the Pokemon universe, you have shiny Pokemon. This is another thing that I have to explain. It's a Pokemon that isn't rare. It's just a really wild Pokemon. But what makes it rare is the fact that it's colored differently from a regular Pokemon of its class.
It's really, really hard to come by.
A good example of this would be Gyarados. Gyarados' standard color in all games is blue. Now, if you find a rare or a shiny version of Gyarados, it's red. So that blows your mind. The first time you see that, it's, what is it? I got this. I captured my first shiny Pokemon too, and I was like, what is going on? So I had to catch it.
Yeah, same thing. Well, I think the red Gyarados is actually, he's just hanging out in a lake in one of the versions, isn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, and the shining Gyarados they have here is actually his standard pictures, him being on the lake. But this one has 9 bids. It's got 2 hours left, so time is of the essence for this one. And it's got 9
Get
bids.
Get on it, people.
And the price is $15.50.
$15.
So, yeah.
Well, that's still... How much profit do you think that is against the original price? I mean,
considering an original pack of Pokemon cards was about $10, he's up $5.50. Because all the other cards in that pack were probably crap. So
yeah,
he's $5 in his investment for a pack of Pokemon cards that he bought 10 years ago. So
wow,
the residuals are. I mean,
so he's making like an extra $0.50 a year.
It's so worth it to just keep them and take care of them. And if you had to go through a burning house,
you don't actually have to take care of them. It's a video game.
That guy's gonna enjoy a really good sandwich when he finally sells this.
That's one way of putting it. It's like finally all these years.
I'm going to Subway.
I have this sandwich.
Wait, you can't go to Subway. That's too expensive. He has to go to like McDonald's or something.
I'm going to McDonald's. So yeah, it's one of those crazes that people thought was these things are going to be worth so much. And while the game has crossed that, you know, generational gap, the cards have not done that very well.
And do you think they're kind of the cards at least are kind of a product of their time? Because I remember the 90s being like crazy for that kind of thing. You've got, we mentioned Beanie Babies, Furbies.
Yes.
Tickle Me Elmo. Pokemon cards.
I punched a man for a Tickle Me Elmo.
You did?
Yeah.
You didn't tickle him for it? That's the ideal way to obtain the Tickle Me Elmo.
I answer all my problems with aggression.
Oh, I see.
So, while I could have tickled him and garnered the same result.
Scared the crap out of her.
Yeah, that's usually what it does to us, too. It's F at random.
You were oddly prepared for that.
I'm desensitized to that sound.
Really?
You can't scare me.
Is that a challenge?
It might be.
All right.
We can try.
It's on.
No. I think the cards have it was just, they're definitely a product of their time.
Yeah,
that's not to say
they still have the cards around.
That's not to say that they're not still releasing them.
Yeah,
they still are. They still, for their purpose of the trading card game, which is a lot of people forget that you actually play a game with these.
Well, and that was going to be my next question. And did you ever play the game, or did you just collect the cards?
I did both.
Okay, is the card version considered less fun?
No.
No? They're actually considered equal?
Well, I come from a background of video game development. I've spent the last 2 years of my life getting edumacated on everything video games. And I've kind of been able to see the commonalities between a physical game and a video game. Mm-hmm. They're both games. And so this is where I'm having a hard time with this question, is because I'm like, why would one be more fun than the other? They're both games. They have rules. They have completion terms. They have, you know, different strategies that you can apply to them to win in different ways. I feel like as long as you go in with the right mindset, mm-hmm. they can be sort of a similar experience.
So you and your peers growing up liked both games equally?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, that question specifically, mm-hmm. not just me, me and my peers, I think we actually enjoyed the card game better.
Really?
Wow. Yes, because the card game was sort of automatically social, whereas the game had to be social via link cable, which was a pain in the butt at the time. Mm-hmm. You know, you had to be like 6 feet in front of the person you were connected to. So, I vividly remember having a much more entertaining time on the cards than on the game itself.
I'm getting to know you a lot more through this very special episode, Zach, because really? I didn't know any of that.
Is you playing footsies with me over
yeah.
there?
Yeah.
They're only about 6 feet apart.
Yeah. Exactly. You want
to link cable this really social occasion.
Oh, yeah.
Come here.
Connect it up. I'm going to send you some packets.
Send me some Pokemon. That would probably
no,
be better.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Who's your favorite Pokemon?
Ooh. Crap. Do you know that off the top of your head? That's going to take me a second to figure that out.
Well, you should have some theme music for How Well Does Hector Know You?
Bum, 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 bum.
Your favorite That's Pokemon just is probably... Yeah, we can't use that. We're going to get sued.
No, I'll just play the notes in a random order.
Okay.
And it's my... It's
hit
my
a piano now. With like karate chop action. That's still the rhythm, but we'll work on that.
It's Haunted House Jeopardy.
It's really hard when you tell someone that's like eats and breathes Pokemon, they'll either have a really quick answer.
I don't think
or...
you're supposed to eat them.
Are you sure?
I don't think you're supposed to inhale them either.
Okay.
I don't know what you do with them once you've got them.
I'm doing this wrong.
You put them in the Pokeball.
Yeah, you do that.
Okay.
You're going to have to help me remember this name.
Oh, then it's not your favorite Pokemon.
No, it is, because I know that I used it and I know what it looks like.
I know he's a
it's
thing
something
and
Scyther,
does
it's the
things.
Green guy.
It's Scyther.
It's Scyther's
it's Scyther.
After you feed him the metal
it's Scyther.
Stone.
It's Scizor.
That one.
Yeah.
Is he an evolved version?
Okay, so Scyther is kind of a praying mantis like Pokemon, except he's got like
You find him on the
scythes.
Safari, don't you?
Yeah, Safari Zone. Yes.
The Safari
he's got
was awesome.
For hands?
Yeah. So it's like a praying mantis, but he's got slice for hands.
Oh, okay.
And
he looks really cool, though. Crazy cool.
When he's originally a bug type, but this is the interesting about Pokemon too. When you trade Pokemon, you have the potential to evolve them through trading. There's some Pokemon that will only evolve if you trade them. So this again presents itself with another opportunity to socialize, because it's like in order to get this Pokemon registered to your Pokedex, you actually have to trade. There's no way around it. There's just no way you could have this form of Pokemon in your Pokedex. So Scyther was one of those unique ones that needed a steel coat, which is an item obtainable in the game. So you grab your Scyther,
yeah.
you put a steel coat on him, you trade him across, and when he gets it, when the other person gets it on his end, it just starts to evolve. So, but my favorite Pokemon, gosh, it's so hard. Typhlosion. Yeah.
What?
Typhlosion. He's one of the second generation starters. You have Charizard's a close second.
Typhlosion is the fire.
He's a fire mouse, and then he turns into like a fire weasel, and then he turns into a fire bear. That's his like ultimate stage. So I will show you a picture of him and let you render judgment on what you're seeing here.
But think I have a picture of Typhlosion over there.
There
actually.
We go. So we're going to take a quick break. I'm going to show her some things and creep her out and let her question why she even came here, because this guy's clearly obsessed with Pokemon and he's so old. And we'll be right back.
And we are back from our break, and we're going to get it back into more of the same. And on our break, we still talked about Pokemon.
Yeah.
And something that came up was that it's a little controversial that they evolve.
So there are a few controversies because it's a very child-friendly game. And how can you have controversies in such a child-friendly game? Well, there's
one of the videos you sent me to was fascinating. It listed a bunch of controversies.
Yes.
One of which was that I forget the character's name, but it looks like someone in blackface.
Yes. Pokemon Jinx was a very controversial
film. Is it supposed to be like a woman in a dress? Like with
it
a head?
Almost looks like an opera lady.
It emulated, I think, the appearance of a man in drag, first of all.
A man in drag and blackface. Blackface drag.
So there's like so many things working against this Pokemon.
It's the opposite of white chicks.
Jinx was one of the original 150, and I think it was unintentional use of blackface because there was very little communication between in the first generation of Pokemon. So when they released them, Jinx had a black face, big lips, and just eyes.
Lips were red. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Big lips and a big, big blonde hairdo. So a lot of people here, when they saw it here in America,
when the game first came out, it was black and white, right?
I believe the first ones were.
And so that's what we're saying is that there wasn't any color, so your options were black or white, right?
Yes.
And so that's kind of how it came to be.
Her portrayal in the early animated series, though, I think was also with a black face.
Right.
But Nintendo realizing the stigma of blackface in North America, because, again, this is the cultural difference between Japan and the United States, right, where Japan is predominantly Japanese above everything else. There's very little foreign interest.
So they changed it before it came to the US?
They changed it after the initial reactions of Jinx.
Okay, so they changed it based on outcry.
Yes.
Okay.
So there was so much outcry that they actually were forced to change it from a black face to a purple face.
Right.
So there was that disconnect in blackface.
And there was another one that they switched, I think, before coming to the US, and it had like a Heil Hitler kind of hand.
The sprite for some of the first sprites for, what was it? Registeel? Registeel had a hand in the air, kind of giving the Hitler salute. So Registeel was one of the first sprites changed from localization from the Japanese games to North American. I think the rest of the world has.
Wasn't there like a Hitmonlee looking character that had like a cross on his neck, and they had to take that off because of the religious obligations?
There was something like that, and there was one that was carrying prayer beads. And they took the prayer beads out.
But yeah, there was one I remember them having to change because of religion.
There are a few that they've had to localize because of also religious aspects. I think that was like Meditite or Medicham.
And there was a couple they had to make less sexy.
I don't know about those.
Well, yeah, this is just based on the video I saw, so I don't know the characters'
names. It's really amazing, though, what parents are able to just drum up from watching their kids playing games.
And well, what you had told me about over the break was the fact that they evolve.
Yes, which is a very, very controversial word if you're a diehard Christian. So the idea of evolution is very Darwinistic, and I mean, he pretty much coined the word. So Pokemon go through evolutions. They don't mature with age. It's kind of once you reach a level, and it tends to be level. There are also other ways to evolve a Pokemon. But once you reach certain requirements for a Pokemon, they evolve.
And how do you level? By winning a match?
Yes.
Okay.
It's a standard RPG mechanic where, you know, a victory brings experience points and losing doesn't bring not experience points, but it brings losing. So
can't penalize the player.
Just shame.
Gotta always reward you.
Yeah.
They don't de-evolve out of shame.
They don't de-evolve out of shame.
Oh, okay. There would be a massive like a rage quit ratio if you could go backwards.
The level mechanic plays a very interesting role early on in the game. Say you think you're a smart guy and you're going to trade with your friend and get like a level 50 Onix. And, oh, I'm just going to trade you for like this level 2 Pidgey. And once you trade, you'll be very dismayed and very dissatisfied because once you have that Pokemon and release him onto the field mid-battle or during the battle, it will not obey your commands.
It just like goes to bed.
There's a very small percentage that it will actually follow through with the command, but because the Pokemon is so high level, it will not pay attention to your
commands. It's smarter than you now.
It will actually go as far as to fall asleep during the match.
Do some of them evolve faster than others?
Some do. There's the aspect, that's for another part of the mechanics plan. Bug Pokemon are very prone to evolving at very early stages compared to other Pokemon, but statistically they're very weak regardless because they're bugs. So they moved, Caterpie, I think he evolves in the teens, to his next stage, which is relatively quick considering that for other Pokemon, the average, if it's a three-stage Pokemon, the next stage is usually around the mid-20s or late-20s.
Are they all three-stage?
No, and that's the other key, too, is there are almost no absolutes in Pokemon. For every mechanic that you have, there's almost at least one Pokemon that will defy that mechanic. So a lot of Pokemon are two-stage, or some don't evolve at all.
Mm-hmm. This is really what gets me excited about Pokemon, though. I enjoyed the card game a lot, and I had a really good time with my friends playing the card game.
In the card game?
There is, actually.
Interesting. How do you do that?
I believe it involved somehow using the elements on your cards, but when you look at a Charizard, it would say evolve from Charmander, from Charmeleon, and then Charmeleon would say evolve from Charmander, and you'd have a chain like that. So it benefits you to have all of them? I don't remember if you could just play them. Or if there was some cost to that. It's been a very long time.
There's probably some cost. That's what I'm thinking.
There are some cards that complemented you if they were together, though. But anyway,
you have to have that Pokemon in your deck to evolve it. You can't just be like, Charmeleon's evolving to Charizard. It's like, well, do you have the card? No, well, then you can't evolve it.
Even now with like the super ultra mega evolutions, which is not the right name for them, that you'd be like just slapping a giant card in the middle of the table, be like, boom.
I wouldn't say it's a game breaking mechanic, but something introduced again in this series, the current one, because again, this game is so revolutionary, is they introduce the idea of X evolutions. Mm-hmm. So it's a fourth stage. And this is where I rolled my eyes really hard, because it's like, no, you can't. After like 15 years of this game, you just cannot have a fourth stage. It's one, two, three, and then you're done. You're just done.
Well, you do have to understand. Sorry to cut you off. No. You do have to understand, though, with design. And these designers, these people that you hire onto your game development team to specifically create game mechanics, game rules, and make your game fun. That's the job of the designer.
Right.
The programmer, not so much. I just get a task, I finish it, and go on about my day. The designer's job is to make sure that it's fun and balanced.
Right.
And that mechanic is, I don't know how, but it sounds like it's game-breaking. It sounds like there's a pinhole that someone can eventually get to where they just overdo everything.
Here's the mechanic with X Evolutions is, since they're very unique, the way you reach that fourth stage is you have to have a special held item. So what that means is that X stage Pokemon cannot have a held item, and held items come into effect in Pokemon battles. There's some Pokemon items that can be held by Pokemon that will change the way they act
in a Pokemon battle. Eat them and heal themselves and stuff.
Pokemon know what to do with organic things like berries. So if they're low health or they have a status effect, like you introduce status effects, you could freeze Pokemon, burn them. They all come with disadvantages in the middle of a battle. Paralyze will at random times immobilize your Pokemon. Burning will cause, after every move, a Pokemon will burn. It's the same effect with poison too. If your Pokemon's poisoned, it will take damage on that turn, regardless of what happens.
Well, and that's part of the strategy, right? Is learning to play fire at a certain time water at a certain time.
And a phenomenal resource for that is like the decks on the National Dex on YouTube. They have so many battles, and they'll teach you the ins and outs.
And what you're talking about is a YouTube channel that is just about Pokemon.
Just about Pokemon.
And
battling.
It's a guy and a girl.
Yes.
And they just play Pokemon.
Yeah, and they're very into it. They break down stats.
That's all they ever do. They don't eat or sleep.
They practically just consume stats to stay alive. It's what they live for. And it's how they live.
I don't
live.
Blame them. That sounds like a good way of life.
If I could do that I'm not very good in the competitive scene, though, when it comes to Pokemon battling. I always think I'm like top brass, and then as soon as I actually play with someone, I just get destroyed. But amongst my friends, I'm the best Pokemon player. So
I only win it if I have all level 99 Pokemon.
Well, and either way, we're seriously digressing, I think, from the question, which is...
I don't know that there was a question, but we talked about the controversy.
Oh, yes.
But there's not much to say. Parents flipped out. Now, a minute ago, you did say that this game was revolutionary. What are they doing that's revolutionary? What is different about Pokemon that kind of changed the face of gaming?
They've had to find ways to keep the ideas fresh, first of all. But I think it's what Pokemon initially started with that made the games revolutionary, which is it's just the fact that you can fight, you can trade. That had never happened in a series of games before. In RPGs, you just had a party of people and yourself, and that was it. You would go into battle and you would do this, but you were never able to trade characters. You were never able to. So the social dynamic of Pokemon is huge because it made introverts a little bit closer to socialization. There was that forced, you know, if you want to be a Pokemon master, you're going to have to trade. You're going to have to get out there, muster up enough courage and be like...
There's also a couple things I can speak to as well, because when you're looking at game mechanics, when a game mechanic is designed, I mean, it's supposed to make the game fun and interesting and stuff like that. So let's take a look. I remember having my big old fat chunky Game Boy... there's not even a modifier keyword, just the Game Boy.
The original.
Yeah, the big fat gray one that took four AA batteries and just milked those things for energy. But I started out with the blue version, and games I had before that were Tetris. I had a Dr. Mario, I think. There was a Game & Watch Gallery game, which is just an ode to even older games.
Straight
than
up
that.
Classics. The Game & Watch series was Nintendo's first foray into mobile gaming.
Mm-hmm.
Which was just fixed characters on a little black and white LCD screen.
And they would just light up in different spots.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, look at those experiences, though. How simple were those games? Tetris's core mechanic is really easy. It's just dropping the blocks in the right spot and trying to get a line. So yay, you know, good for you guys. It was awesome.
Tetris is great.
It blew minds whenever it, you
That's
know.
My game experience coming into this. Just
all right,
out.
We got Tetris.
I played Tetris.
We got Tetris experience. That's good. Checkmark.
I've played GoldenEye before.
So that's a big checkmark. but anyway, so just looking back at the mechanics that existed around that time and then looking at Pokemon, how much more complexity is there and how much more potential is there for the game mechanic? Like... Not only, like, Tetris is great, but I don't get attached to it on a personal level. I don't walk away, like, you know, wishing I was hugging a tetrahedron. But I, on my Pokemon game, I literally cried at one point. And it's a sad story, I know, but...
You are choking up a little bit.
No, I need something to wipe this away. I remember one day I was trying to show one of my friends my game. And I had 149 out of the original 150.
Oh, wow.
And who knows what the last one was? Anybody? What's the last? I had 149 out of 150 Pokemon. Which one am I missing?
Mewtwo?
Yep. So Mewtwo is the very last one you get off in a cave somewhere, and it's a pretty nerve-wracking battle. Unless you save that first Master Ball. Then
northeast of Cerulean City. But yeah.
Yeah. So I wanted to show my friend this game that I was playing that was really exciting. And so I brought him over to my house and I gave him the game. And I was like, here, let's just start a new game and not save anything, right? And then he didn't save it, which is great. I took the game and out of habit saved over my original progress. Everything I'd done,
oh, no.
Gone. And I'm talking hours of gameplay. And I just remember turning it off, turning it on, very high hopes. That maybe that was just a weird figment of my imagination. And then it showed that Blink game save with the little character walking next to it. And I just bawled my eyes out. Bawled my eyes out. And I don't remember how old I was.
I think then. Zach just touched on the reason this has become a cultural phenomenon, too, is for kids, they're rarely in control of their lives. They always have parents telling them what to do, teachers telling them what to do, coaches. It's Pokemon was one of the first games where a kid kind of understood what hard work meant, at mm-hmm. least in the game sense, because here you have the freedom, first of all, to catch any of the 150 Pokemon and make them part of your select group of six that you release in battle, because you're only limited to six at one battle. Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of decisions to make for a kid that age. So that's why they become aficionados and pros at this game, is because it was all that freedom to just roam around, catch, make decisions. So I think that's what really appealed to kids. I think it was just that fact. There's so many things. And whenever I played the game, it was very methodical and I didn't realize it. And I would just see what other kids were doing. It's like, I don't know what to do here. Or it's like, I don't know what to do with this or that. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
In the game industry, there's a word to describe that.
What is it?
it's something that Tetris doesn't have, well, at least to me. Maybe Tetris had a small group that was affected in an emotional way, but the word is immersion.
Yes.
And when games start to become immersive, that's when you get emotionally attached. And I think that was one of the best parts about Pokemon.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And it's because you have your favorites too. So there's so many decisions and you can actually pick and choose. And it's so easy to look at a Pokemon commercial and just see a kid's eyes light up because they're immediately identifiable. They're kind of a symbol of power. One of the earliest examples that kids have over control and power and understanding that and knowing the consequences of a good team and a bad team or just strategic decisions, if they even choose to have any.
And are there a lot of other games that are like that for kids?
No, not at that time. I mean, everything wanted to be like Pokemon after that, so that's why you have a lot of spinoffs.
We talked about Digimon.
Digimon was, they wanted to have the aspect of battling. They wanted to take it a step further where it was just like I guess they called them Digivices, but Tamagotchi, for example, came before that. So Tamagotchi was primarily aimed at both girls and guys, but it was just raising a little tiny animal.
Tamagotchi had immersion, though.
Yes.
That was the good thing about it. You got attached.
It's that one-on-one attachment with this little monster that you're trying to raise.
Right. It's kind of similar to what you're talking about.
It
gives a kid responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So in a weird sense, what kids try to dodge in everyday life becomes very excitable because it is something that has relatively low consequences, but there's still that idea of if I don't do this, you know, dire things will happen. And
there's a perceived payoff.
Yes. And even with the Tamagotchi series, I think Bandai took a look at it and they were like, well, how do we make this more like Pokemon? It's like, well, why don't we just make these like tiny Digivices that like battle? It's like, oh, well, Digimon. There you go. So then they had an animated series for that.
I remember doing that on the bus and battling my friends on the way to school. I also remember that and this is probably a direct reflection of my chore habits these days, but I always got the poop slug. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Digimon, it was really cool that they actually, I think at one point, had Pokemon that used to just were pretty much poop.
When they render it in the animated series, when he shows up, I don't remember the name of that Digimon, but when he shows up, it's literally just a pile with antlers.
Oh my god!
And it shoots other piles.
It flings poop, but in the show, in the animated show, it's pink. So there's kind of a way of getting.
I guess
around
they bridged it a little bit. Your imagination is the only thing you had on those little devices.
Japan found their very clever way of like. Yeah.
But if you neglected it and didn't feed it when it was hungry and didn't give it the attention that it demanded from you, it would turn into the poop slug. And if you took really good care of it, it turns into super awesome T-Rex things.
De-evolving from shame also, you know, that we were talking about earlier.
Yeah.
You don't take care of it.
In a sense,
poop.
In a sense.
That's awful.
That's a penalty.
Right.
And game design has shifted over the years. We now try to evade penalties as much as possible. In fact, Call of Duty being a great example, we reward you for everything. If you die, we reward you. We do it because we want you to keep playing.
Do you find that disappointing?
Maybe it takes away the purity of it a little bit? But there's good and bad applications about it. I think it's what made Call of Duty so immersive to everyone is you pick it up. And even though you got shot by somebody and you died, you still got a reward when you came alive for hiding the longest time behind a trash can or, you know, what any number of achievement things that you can get. And because of that, you go, I think I'm going to play this a little bit longer. And
I'm thinking about a game I played recently. It was on the PS3. It was a Lego video game about superheroes.
Marvel or DC?
Was it the one with Iron Man?
Iron Man was there. Also Spider-Man and Hulk.
We have that in there too. Yeah.
Okay. Well, so the thing about that is that it's kid friendly in the sense that you fall off a bridge, you just go into the water and now you're swimming. When it seems like in older other games, you would just die or have to start over somewhere else. And it does kind of encourage you to keep playing. Now you're exploring somewhere else. Now you're swimming.
Yeah. So, well, the biggest reason we've done that or evolved to satisfy those conditions these days is because we don't want to lose money.
Yeah.
Although they do like making a kid-friendly game, that's a big thing on the Lego series. But it's more like the disappointment for me is when I played Mass Effect 3, which I don't know if you've played or heard of Mass Effect at all.
Heard, yes.
You've heard of it. And amazing just in itself. If you can watch someone play the game, it's very cinematic. It's like a movie. It's amazing. But I remember playing Mass Effect 3 and they have an option in the game to basically disable the part where you play. And what that means is when you go into a battle area where normally you'd be fighting enemies, they skip it. They basically jump between cutscenes and everything like that. They cut out the work because there's actually people who want to buy this game and don't want to play it.
It's a space soap opera.
They just want to watch it.
The reason we've adapted that behavior is because we've started rewarding them instead of penalizing them. Now, if you can think of the old Ninja Turtles game that's very aggravating on the Super Nintendo, was it? And it's just horrible jumping mechanics and very hard to navigate through, and it's
could
terrible.
Could be the one Konami made. It could be Turtles in Time. I'm not sure.
Either way, those games were rewarding because they were so difficult to get through.
Oh, that's true.
And it was like, in fact, not everyone would complete them. When you talk to someone and tell them your story, if you say you complete it, it's like, what?
To this day, there are many people that will complain and almost get like PTSD for games that were ridiculously hard that they never passed. And one of the big
just
games
because
on
the technology
NES
hadn't caught up yet, and so it was hard make that fluid.
Yes, it was hard to make some of those experiences fluid. I think Battletoads on the NES was a perfect example of that.
I like that game.
It was, how many people do you know that have made it through Battletoads?
One.
Yeah.
And it wasn't me.
It wasn't you. Aww.
It wasn't me.
You going to cry again?
Yeah. It's a very emotional episode for me.
That's what I bring out in people.
We're going to let Zach cry in a corner. But yeah.
It sort of sound like a goat.
Quite the contrast, though. We went from Pokemon to Call of Duty, which could not be any more.
That was me. Tangent Master, just shooting it off in the distance.
Well, I think it kind of represents the evolution of the game of Pokemon. You started out, we said it was black and white.
Right.
And it wasn't available on very many systems.
No.
Right?
And still to this day isn't, because it's a Nintendo property.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. But
and they're like, mine.
Yes.
But over time, you, what, added color?
It added
became
color.
Less
color.
2D, more.
Ooh,
3D.
Mechanics.
You know what you want to talk about.
Yeah.
I see you right now.
What do I want to talk about?
Oh. You want to talk about when they added dual battles.
Yeah.
Let's bring in the theme music. How well do you know Hector?
It's time to play. How well do you know the guy that stays in your house?
Oh, well, hopefully at least more than none, because then you're just lurking.
Because then it's one of those stories of like a Japanese apartment where the guy's living in the ceiling.
Oh, wait, there's a guy in my house. What?
But okay, so, yeah, so the biggest mechanics were, it used to be just a one-on-one battle, one Pokemon against one Pokemon.
You could switch Pokemon, though. Like if one was weak, you could swap it out.
You can switch Pokemon mid-battle.
So they present something, you try one of yours, it's not working out, you switch to a different one.
Yes.
Okay.
So switching Pokemon is actually essential in a lot of competitive gaming.
Yeah.
To
you'll realize
survive.
You have like a weakness.
Yeah.
And
so
you've
when
been
you're
taking a lot of damage,
making
you
your
out.
Dream team, you pick ones with different elements, different
yes.
strengths.
Yes. For example, Pokemon, the Ooh. Battle system is based on moves. So it's a turn. So based on the statistic of speed, either your Pokemon or their Pokemon will attack. Now, based off of that, let's say you start out with a Pokemon that is grass element and they have an element. They start out with their Pokemon and it's a fire element. First one drawn out, both ready. Okay, so the person with the grass type Pokemon knows, I am screwed. If I do not switch out, I will meet flaming death.
Right.
Because, you know, obviously fire is weak against grass. So what this person can do now is one of two things. Take on a full-on flamethrower, just come at me, bro. Or or they can strategize and meet, well, I could bring out a water type Pokemon, which is a fire type attack, is very, very ineffective.
It's strategic rock, paper, scissors.
Yes, it's very strategic
you,
rock, paper, scissors.
You actually spurred something that they added from the original game before we talk about the dual battles, and that was actually dual elements or dual types of Pokemon.
Well, okay.
They would actually rock two types instead
yeah.
of just one.
Primarily, Pokemon used to be just one type of Pokemon, but a way to encourage or discourage the use of a Pokemon or a move is through dual types. So not only do you have a grass type, but this grass type Pokemon is also a water type. So you have a grass water type. So that makes it a little bit more resistant against, it will make it a little bit more resistant against a fire type move, but it also makes it more susceptible to another type of move. And there, I think the last time I checked, there's, I think 13, 16 different types of Pokemon. I say this unsurely because throughout the years and in this most recent generation, they've actually introduced another type. So it just throws a different mechanic. Yeah, after 15 years, this game is still evolving.
Well, and that's one of my questions. How many are there now? Because we said 150 original.
Ugh.
Oh, well.
And every generation
brings more. Those are Pokemons, but they're also divided into the subgroups of types.
Right.
So let me just give you a very basic example.
Oh, no, I got it. I'm just wondering how many. How many Pokemon
there are. When you got to catch them all, how much you get catch?
Oh, yeah. Gosh, I think there's like 500.
Didn't they go back to, they went to 350, I think, and then they came back.
While he's looking like this up, who is the like weakest, most lame Pokemon?
Magikarp.
Wow, very good. Boom. That was fast.
Pokemon trivia.
But he turns into a dragon.
He does, but you have to evolve him a very special way.
You have to throw him in the
I don't think you throw him. Other than that, he just splashes at people and does nothing. I guess he's good for surf. You can surf on him.
I don't even think he can learn surf.
Really?
No.
He's more useless.
So his purpose is just to get caught. You don't fight with him because he's stupid.
It's a design principle. Yeah, you don't want to. If you put a Magikarp out, it would either be to evade a really powerful attack you know is coming and you're just going to sacrifice that Pokemon. or you acquire this Pokemon because you know that it will be rewarding later when you get a Gyarados.
When you win, are you giving your Pokemon to that guy? Or
no.
Okay.
No, that would be crazy. you spend all this time leveling them and teaching them moves so that they work as a component on your team. And then if he was just like, oh, now you have to have one of my Pokemon and be like, oh.
Okay, so I have the answer for you guys.
Don't leave me.
After a little bit of research.
Okay.
Take a guess how many Pokemon there are now. We started out with 150. That quickly moved to an extra 100 in the second generation that I know.
1 million.
So, no. That's just wrong.
My pinky to my lip.
You get out. I can't even see that. You have like a...
No, I'm just picking my nose. Okay. That's what's happening.
It's a really long pinky finger. Any guesses?
Okay, for real. A real guess.
So it's been like 15 years.
15 years, maybe an extra 100 per year.
Right. That's pretty good. So mathematics. Like
500.
Higher.
Boo.
1,500.
Lower.
I was about to say, it better not be that, or I'm going to get scared. I got to catch them all, and you're 40.
My world is rocked.
800.
That's a very close guess. 721. Now, there are currently 718. Where we get the number 721 is because three, and this is another special thing, is that there are three event Pokemon, which Nintendo tends to hold back certain Pokemon for special events where... You're only able to obtain the Pokemon if you go to this event.
Like so, Comic-Con?
Yeah, something like that, but they call them to Pokemon. Sometimes they're only available at special events. Like I just mentioned, if it's a Nintendo-endorsed event and they have a booth where you're actually able to connect and obtain this Pokemon via free trade, it's usually a mystery gift in the older games where even before you start out the game, they have this... No one knows what the mystery gift was in the earlier games. You always just say, that, what is mystery gift? So mystery gift is... at a Nintendo event, you used to select that option to scan for the machine that only gave out that Pokemon, and it would just be inserted into your game. It wasn't even really a trade.
Hmm.
So that's what an event Pokemon is. There are actual places, though, like the Pokemon Center in New York, and it's called Pokemon Center. It's the play on the fact that every city, every big city in Pokemon has a Pokemon Center.
Mm-hmm.
So this is like Legoland, but for Pokemon.
Yeah. Okay. So the Pokemon Center... You can actually go and obtain event Pokemon there. Or now with the advent of the internet, because it was very early in its infancy when Pokemon came out, but you're actually able to obtain Pokemon on the internet now too. You're actually able to trade Pokemon on the internet also.
Do you know what just comes to my mind as you're saying all this? I'm sorry, I got like this huge grin on my face.
Right.
It's just that ba 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 da da. You know what that is?
Yeah, that's the Pokemon being healed.
Thing. That's when you put them on this tray and then this like nurse turns it on and it just goes ding, 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 and just heals everything. All status effects gone, all health 100%.
What do they look like when they're injured? Because there's no gore or anything.
They're actually still in the balls.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
They're in the ball.
In the ball.
But the way it looks is Nurse Joy takes them and she puts them on a tray.
Nurse Joy.
And then she puts them in a machine and then the balls just glow. And then it's like, oh, your Pokemon are fully healed. Now, mid-game or during the game, Pokemon don't actually have battle damage on them. It's just one continuous sprite that reflects them at full health. So as their health degrades, they're not they don't actually appear with battle scars. I think that would be a little weird for children.
You know, they probably move. Yeah. They move towards the more. They actually have animated sprites in the new.
They
games.
Have full 3D now. And for the newest ones, it's really
so they don't have any status effects there. You've actually bought me like all the new games so that I can play them with you, and they're still sitting on the shelf.
I'm so disappointed.
Now Hector's turn to cry.
Why did we not play them before we got started?
Time's the beast.
Well,
time.
That is a very good question.
I mean,
we should
kids,
have busted out the Pokemon.
Kids, you got nothing but time. But
the Pokemans.
I don't.
Maybe we have a third segment. We take a break, play some Pokemon,
the
come back.
Gameplay segment.
So one of us is going to come back really mad, and one of us is going to come back with like chest up and be like, "Yep, big man on campus, still got it." Nice. After 10 years,
I'll probably be the mad one.
I rule you.
Which one of you rage quits more?
Me.
Yeah,
but
you get really emotional.
I've got a really large patience. Yeah, Call of Duty rage quit left and right, but yeah.
Call of Duty has ruined my ability to play RPGs because another aspect is it's instant gratification. Matches last 10 minutes or less, and with Pokemon, it's a 40-plus hour game. It's an RPG. RPGs require time. That's just something you don't have when you're an adult, so if you're looking for something quick and entertaining, you tend to just gravitate for something that's just 10 minutes or less, or
Angry Birds.
Yeah.
Yep.
Or Angry Birds. This is a completely opposite
She's
spectrum of that.
Out.
But,
yeah. Angry Birds is great because of that design.
It's bite size. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, were there friendships lost over Pokemon?
Absolutely.
Is that a thing? I mean,
there was physical fights in my world.
Were schoolyard fights for Pokemon cards. I'll tell you
at
that.
School and off school. Both.
If you think you got a bad trade, you're going to fist fight.
Yeah.
You're going to get those cards back one way or another. Oh, there's also the prospect of obtaining a fake Pokemon card.
Really?
They were actually counterfeits. So
that's how popular it was.
There were, and kids were well versed in spotting fakes. So if
when there was a counterfeit, it had a fake character on it.
Sometimes it will. Okay, first of all, if you're into Pokemon, you'll know when you
I
see.
I think I even
Pokemon.
Took a stab at making counterfeits.
Yeah, because you were designing your own.
Well, I actually tried to make my own version of the card game for a while, but then I thought maybe I might be able to trade off.
As a matter of fact, there's a phone app now that lets you turn
I have
a picture.
That. I made Chip into a Pokemon.
Yeah, and it lets
they have one of those for My Little Pony.
His
it's very cute.
Attacks were honking and I think pooping was the other attack.
That's very accurate.
Well, I mean, he doesn't do a lot. That's kind of his roster.
Chip has used poop.
See, right? He's getting excited.
So,
has there ever been a situation where someone comes up with a counterfeit Pokemon and then it gets put in the game? Like Nintendo realizes this is a pretty little character
that
design.
That hack Pokemon. I don't think that's in the same class, but that might be the closest. Number 9 or number 11. I can't remember.
Well, there's Mystery Number. Mystery Number has reached cult status amongst Pokemon players because it's not actually a Pokemon. What it is, it's just a jarble of unreadable, unusable data that somehow in the game still represents itself as a Pokemon. And it is a game-breaking mechanic. I mean, you could use it in several ways because it is a glitch. You could use it, depending on which iteration of the game you're talking about, even replicate Pokemon or items.
I actually obtained the Mystery Number at one point. But
wow. I ran into it and I just reset the game.
Well,
I was so scared.
When you see what the heck? Oh, that actually brings up...
It's
you'll probably like to talk about the Rumors of the Haunted game.
Oh, I mean... Oh, there's so much lore that we can get into with Pokemon.
Is.
But to answer
just
your
1,000 foot view.
To answer your question, there have been a lot of games where there has been feedback from the audience, from the Pokemon audience, and there has been a Pokemon to answer the feedback from the audience. So it wasn't much one created by the people, but it was people telling Nintendo
but
what they kind of wanted
people.
To see. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
I like that.
So Nintendo is keyed in with their audience.
That's a tricky question.
It's been rocky.
Rocky as of late.
Yes, rocky as of late.
In Nintendo's heyday, they were very responsive to what the audience had to say, and it was very back and forth in a friendly way.
So they made some fan favorites.
Yes.
Nice.
So if there was, I think, a quote in a previous game that a lot of people were confused about, where there's a girl that says, "I wish there was a Pokemon like a balloon," and a lot of people are like, "Is there a Pokemon like balloon?" It's like, why would she say that? Where's this going? What are you doing to us, Nintendo? What are you trying to tell us? And then Nintendo, the next game, "Hey, there's Drifloom there."
Is that the one that drags children to hell?
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. Well, okay. Here's the thing too. In localization, they tend to stray away from those really, here's the thing. You catch them and then you only read the Pokemon Dex entry like one time. And it's just like, I've beaten you, I've gotten you. I read it because it will show you once your Pokemon Dex is updated with that captured Pokemon's information. But a lot of people don't double read what they just read. They're just like, yeah, I caught it. It's like, wait, it drags kids to what? And it's there. They don't change the Dex entry. They used to stay away from those really weird ones. But there are some character descriptions in the Pokedex that will make you wonder, how kid friendly is this game? For example, there's another one too, Cubone to Marowak. Cubone wears a skull helmet. Mm-hmm. Cubone's face is never actually revealed. And in the Pokemon, in the Pokedex entry, I think it says something like, Cubone wears the helmet of its deceased mother. It's a battle.
Oh my God. What?
But no one reads it. It's like, oh, what a
and
cool
so
skull helmet.
And this is in the English translation as well.
I believe it made it to the English translation as well. Yeah,
because with the balloon one, it seems like that was that might have been Japanese translation
altered slightly.
Yeah, that one sounds a little intense.
And then it was made to be a little less frightening.
Yes.
For American audiences,
I can see the mom that won't let her children watch Harry Potter running away in fear, throwing.
Well,
the Game Boy
she's already not letting them play because evolution.
I like to study Pokemon, well, Japanese culture in particular too. So I find that the Japanese are very comfortable with the creep factor. I mean, come on. This is a country that produced The Ring. So,
well, you've got some of those Miyazaki movies that have dark elements,
yes,
too.
So they're not as prone to shy kids away from darker aspects of things. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just a part of life. Whereas here, everything we want to show our kids is like, oh, it's all rainbows and everything's all colorful. And oh, what is this text entry? Don't read it. You know, it's just like, and that's Nintendo of America. So it's like, okay, I got this, ma'am. We're going to alter it. We need things to be kid friendly. You know, kids got to read it and not cry. So we hold people's hands here. It's America.
Yeah. Well,
we stray away from the darkness.
I know we can probably spend all day talking about this stuff. We should probably get around to the end of this, though.
Do you have any more questions?
It's super smooth.
This is my signature right here.
Uh-huh. Transition master.
It's amazing.
And the transition master and the tangent master as well. And that's my my tangent master.
Any other like quick questions that you had? Like quick hits?
Was Pikachu an actual like original character or no? Because one of the videos you sent me said that he was made into the hero of the cartoon to appeal to, well, for merchandising, but also just to be cute so that moms would understand that this was...
He kind of has what the Japanese call a chibi aspect to him, mm-hmm, where it's small, cute. So they wanted a Pokemon with a lot of appeal to a lot of countries. So, well, first of all, in the localization from American... I'm going to keep this as brief as I can. But from the localization from Japanese to English, a lot of people didn't think... A lot of Japanese people didn't work because some of the Pokemon just look too downright cute. They're like, we need to make these more manly, macho. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you know, we'll show Pikachu, and he's got mass appeal towards everyone. Because Pikachu's kind of cute.
Getting girls interested.
Yes,
which is
exactly.
What you were talking about earlier, trying to make the appeal a little more universal.
And there are a lot of cute Pokemon. And as a matter of fact, they've added female-oriented stuff.
They're gendered, right?
Yeah, and they're genders too, but that's also for the purpose of breeding. You could breed Pokemon.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, madam. We haven't
gotten
into that.
And it's a really cute way that they do it. It's like you get two compatible.
Super cute fucking.
That's exactly what it is. It's just like you leave two Pokemon adorable. And there's like an old guard there and all you hear is Pokemon sounds. And it's like the cutest things ever. It just sounds like a bunch of squeakers like squeak, squeak. And then you just like walk in.
Is he messing with
me? Nah, okay, so the way it really works is you grab two Pokemon that are in a compatible egg group, which is, you know, they're very closely related as far as type.
And oh, yeah, girl.
And this is the weirdest thing, too.
You're my egg type.
Vocalizing this, I realize that this is going to drive you a little bit weird, too. So where you take these two set compatible Pokemon.
I think I'm
going
to rewrite my OkCupid profile. Yeah. Tell me about your egg type.
Yeah, exactly. First thing I need to know.
It's like, are you water type? Because I don't know. I'm feeling a little Lapras. I don't know about you. Are you Gyarados? You the Gyarados to my Lapras? You want to make a bunch of little Laprases?
Oh, the girls are looking for Gyarados.
I'm going to run away.
I don't even want to go into that.
In your head, you're just like, run away from this as fast as you can. But the weirdest way that you get them together is they can only produce an egg if they're together at the daycare center. And that's what they call it. That's what they call it.
And that's, and he's not messing with
no,
you.
No, I'm not
he
messing
really
with,
isn't messing with you. No.
Okay, so the thing about that too, and there's some very funny memes regarding the compatible Pokemon, because it's like, really? This thing is like a foot big and Wailord's like the size of a semi and they somehow make eggs. But yeah, that's the weirdest part too. So you leave two compatible Pokemon, you go away, you do some things, you come back, and there's an old man that's in charge of the daycare center, but he's outside as where he's usually inside. So when he talks, he's like, oh, I don't know how it happened, but you have an egg now.
Nintendo's way of saying, you come up with the details.
Yeah. Meanwhile, all we can hear in our heads is like Marvin Gaye music.
And so that comes out with a combo Pokemon?
No, gosh. We would have so many inbred Pokemon.
God, talk to me about Pokemon genetics.
In the end, what determines the Poke Baby inside the Poke Egg, it's based off the female gender. So whichever is the female in that egg group between Pokemon X and Pokemon Y.
So in that situation you're describing where the one is tiny and the one is giant.
Yeah, it just depends because apparently...
Which one's the female? Is she like a real size queen?
I think it's a Skitty, actually. A Skitty is like the most female-looking cat Pokemon that you'll ever see, because there's Meowth. But Skitty was, I think, the third generation Pokemon. She's like a little cute, tiny, adorable pink cat. And Wailord is a whale the size of a semi-truck. So it is a Pokemon that is like a foot big, and it is a semi-truck. And they somehow make babies, and I don't know, but that Skitty is not killed.
And the small one is still an
ass. What would be funny is if you get to the old man and said, well, you know, here's an egg. So, oh, you're a Skitty's dead.
So speaking of two things you wouldn't think work so well together, guys, we're coming to the end of our episode. And nice. And so.
Transition queen.
There we go.
Not size queen, just transition queen. So guys, if people like what you're doing, how do they get a hold of you?
Well, if you'd like to get a hold of Hector and I, you can reach us on Twitter, and the handle is at Slapashow. That's SLAPASHOW.
We also have a Facebook.
Really?
We do.
I'm going to follow that immediately. Or you can get a hold of these guys individually.
Wait, you didn't follow our Facebook? Get out of here.
Yeah, I know. I'm not a real slaphead.
Okay. Yeah, she lied to us. I think the Facebook URL, you can go to facebook.com/Slapashow, SLAPASHOW.
Zach was not featured in the current spelling bee, or the one that just passed, where a bunch of kids were.
I'm going to try my hand at spelling. If you want to get a hold of Hector directly, you can go on Twitter, and he is at Polyphone, PolyFone. And if you want to get a hold of Zach and find out his recipe for ginger loaf, you can get to him on Twitter at Gingerloaf. And I am at Lone Holdout. And Lone Holdout and Slap a Show are both available on iTunes. So rate, review, and subscribe. What do you think of that? And so, guys,
that was really good.
At the end of every episode of Lone Holdout, we say our closing line. Which one of you wants to go first?
Zach, because he forgot.
Right.
Really? You want to put the pressure on me?
Yeah, because the pressure's already on. Why don't we just rip the Band-Aid?
Don't judge yet.
Okay.
All I'm going to say is if you're going to cook, don't cook naked.
Nice.
Okay.
Hector?
Don't cook naked.
Don't cook naked. Good night.
Sweet.
That means that we only have.
Well, I mean,
to
we did interview
here.
Children for a My Little Pony episode.
So. Oh, so you hear that? We beat children.
You beat children?
No, don't say that on the show.
I beat them repeatedly.
Consistently.
Sometimes I just put a blindfold on and go into a room, swinging.
It's not configured. But...
Oh, I was hoping to make the slap noise.
Okay.
I beat children.
I'll have it running this time.
Okay.
It'll be always available.
We're going to try and recreate the moment. Okay.
There we go.
Hector, say you beat children.
I beat children all the time.
Oh, God. It's not going. What is, it's G, right?
You need... I know what you need. Maybe.
I got you what you need.
It's G, right?
Yeah, it's G.
Okay.
Slap. And I beat children all the time.
You have to hold it.
Oh.
What? Hold on.
How do you...
What
he
have you
just
done?
Has a touch.
He's got the slap touch.
She broke it.
Already. She broke it.
Oh, wait. No, I broke it.
Okay.
That's good. There it is. Okay. Is it James? I swear it's good.
Are we? Is it? Can I just say I slap children and I hit children repeatedly?
There you go.
Was it worth the payoff?
Yeah. Worked. How does that feel?
I know. All right. Are we ready? How's our energy, guys?
I think the energy's feeling pretty good.
Right? Okay. Pretty good.
And then we might want to get started.
All right.
Okay.